There we go. All right. What's up, Thursday Warriors? Welcome to another edition of the Toddcast. Tim is possibly coming in. Not real sure yet. But it's cool because I have a special guest, the one and only DP Brown, or the Dog Pound Brown, or Mr. Brown.
I am all that. I am he. I am the one. You know, I am here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. I'm going to run over some dates and stuff, things coming up while we wait for people to hop in the chat and see if Tim shows up late. April 2nd, Mills anniversary sale. Lots of shit on sale. Go out and hang out only at the Mills. May 13th, 14th, 15th is the next Magic pre-release for Streets. Check that out. May 7th is Free Comic Book Day. Obviously, it's like Black Friday for us. Make sure you come out, support a store, buy some stuff, because those comics are not actually free to us. We do have to buy them. But pick up some stuff. I believe the 21st of May, we're going to be hanging out down at Pittsburgh Book Fest. Make sure you check that out as well. It's a big support reading. It'll be over in Regent Square. And then the big deal, the show, which I just got these in the mail today, and they're sexy. Three Rivers Comic Con, first weekend of June. You can catch these at a local store if you want to check it out. Let me just read off all the awesome information. You have the date, which I have already said, the place, which is the David All Arts Convention Center. And then we have some pretty cool guests coming, like Howard Chaykin, Rick Leonardi, Brett Breeding, Daryl Banks, Ron Frenz, Pat Olive, Don Simpson, Wayne Foucher, Dave Wachter, Dave Nessler, Tom Scioli, Dan Mendoza, Bill McKay, Maria Wolf, Dave DeWatch, Howard Bender, Joe Woos, Matt Horak, James Patrick, Justin Jordan, Sammy Castillo, and more. So much more at our website. Check it out. Pre-sale tickets are now till May 7th, May 8th. They switch over to a little bit higher of a price tag, so make sure you pick them up before that. And I think that's all I had on there that I needed to actually talk about. Oh, yeah. Don't forget, CBCS will be there for drop-offs and signature verifications. Send your stuff out to get graded with them. They are cheaper. And they are also faster than CBC or CGC. So not that I don't like CGC. I like them both. But we are rolling with these guys this time. So cool. I think that's pretty much everything I needed to talk about from there. Just trying to get some stuff here pulled up real quick, guys. Don't mind me. So, again, was not planning on doing this by myself tonight. I will yell at Tim later. It'll be fine.
Awesome. Got it covered tonight, you know.
totally covered. I think this is all I need. One more second, guys, and I'll have it ready. I apologize for being unprepared. Usually these guys see me fumble with it anyway, because I'm just trying to get everything together last minute all the time. So sorry. All right.
All together is that, you know, you got to make it just happen and everything. So, you know, it takes a little time, but, you know, eventually, you know, you get it together and then you present it and then it's all good in the end.
It's true. It's true. And as long as it's all good, that's all that matters to me. So, all right. So, if you guys have any questions for DP while we do this, just put them in the chat, on the YouTube chat, and I will read them out loud later. We do have a couple guys watching already, which is awesome. And, we'll go from there. So you are here, sir, because you are friends with a friend of the show, Marvin Nguyen. He recommended, Marvin. Right? Awesome. Like our Heroinberg extraordinaire and the Edge creator. Which, by the way, the Edge book is very good. I don't know if you've actually read it. It is
really the Edge stuff. I mean, he's been working on that for like a long time now, and he's finally getting them into like I think he has a trade paperback Kickstarter coming out soon. Yeah. So make sure that you guys follow him. You know, the Edge Kickstarter is coming out soon, so he has a follow page coming. So make sure you guys check that out.
Definitely. I believe he's going to be at our waterfront store for Free Comic Book Day too. So make sure you guys check that. I know he will definitely be at our Three Rivers Comic Con. So he, you know, he gave you the idea to reach out to me. We hooked up. Now you want to talk about your new project called Theme of Thieves. Yes. And I'm not going to lie, when you sent me the press release, as soon as it said, "Do you like Quantum Leap?" or however you put it in there, I was like, I'm in. I don't care. Just fucking send me this book. I'm good.
You had me at Quantum Leap. Yeah.
You had me at Sam's Never Going Home. Right.
Well, the funny thing about that, they just announced that they're going to reboot that. So it's supposed to be reboot pretty soon. So I'm excited about that. Oh, yeah.
Anything I hope like
time travel.
I hope if it's a whole nother leaper, like that we see him leap. Like I hope that both he, like Sam Beckett, shows up, and I hope it's at least I hope that they would bring in Bakula. They can't obviously bring in Stockwell anymore,
right?
But if they could bring in Bakula, that'd be cool. And then I really hope they bring in the female leaper, because that would just be real awkward. Everybody forgot about her, although she was great in a couple episodes. There are only three TV shows that I have ever recorded the final episode for on VHS and still have somewhere.
Really? Right.
Okay. So Star Trek Next Generation is one of them.
Okay.
Cheers is one of them.
Cheers. And then
Cheers, okay. Right? I loved Cheers growing up, man. It was awesome. And then I've been to the original Cheers too, so that's kind of cool. And then Quantum Leap is the other one. I loved that show so much.
The hopping from back and forth in different time periods and stuff. That's a lot of what my book, you know, is about. I spend like the first few issues like setting up the characters, and then they end up, you know, going on to those leaps, those adventures and stuff. Essentially, you know, my book, The Theme of Thieves, is more or less about two teens, and they run into like a mysterious being who takes them through time, and they're trying to solve a mystery of why people are disappearing in the present. So this whole premise is like, what if people are, or I guess I am getting into my stuff now, huh?
So, That's okay. You can go into that, the Kickstarter, just give us the pitch. This is the deal. I'll put up some of the files you sent as you talk.
No problem. So basically the premise is, what if you lived in a world where people just randomly vanish? That's it. And okay, you may think of like Avengers Endgame, you may think of like the, you know, Leftovers, but in my world, you know, that's the it's covered to the first issue. In my world, what if this was like a societal way of life? And what if you know, it affected politics, it affected like religion, it affected culture, it just affected like people's daily lives. How do you deal with that? And this phenomena in my world has been happening since like the 1700s. So I have like, you know, a whole back history of, you know, things that have gone on, you know, back then all the way up until like the present. And when it first started, it was just like, you know, just people just randomly disappearing. And it was small groups of people. Now it's gotten to the point where it's escalating to where it's become worrisome, because, you know, you got to have people in the world to live. So eventually it comes to a point where people are disappearing in like groups and clumps and stuff. And I'm dealing with like the effects of how that world is, and how like the politics would work with that. How do people just, you know, if you were sitting at dinner with your family and all of a sudden, you know, one of your children disappear, that would just be a traumatizing thing, because you have no closure, you know, unlike death, you know, you don't like, you know, like have a funeral or anything like that. You know, your loved one or your friend just disappears, and you just have to deal with it, you know, and also, you know, continue to live on, like living life and everything. So that's my big premise. And my my protagonist, you know, with her name is Rebecca, and then the other one, his name is Jason. They're teens, they're 16-year-old teens in high school. And they had their trials and tribulations, coming of age type stuff. And, you know, they're going through their stuff when all of a sudden just this thing happens. And all of a sudden, you know, the guy in a red suit, you know, who's been hopping through time for like a long period of time, ends up taking them on this, you know, adventures and stuff. So that's where pretty much everything just starts. And then from then on, we get into like our Quantum Leap type stuff, where they just hop on different time periods. And sometimes they're there for, you know, a certain period of time, whether it's a couple minutes, you know, a few hours, matter of weeks or even months or years or whatever. So time, you know, is not a set thing, you know, when they jump into like, you know, these different periods, and they have different things going on. So I won't go into like too much of some of the adventures, but just imagine how that would be as they're trying to figure out why this phenomenon keeps happening and what they can do to actually stop it.
Okay, so now I have two questions. So the first question is, and they're both semi-quantum leapy. So the first one is, so when they jump, do they jump like into other people's bodies, or are they jumping like more like Doctor Who shows up with the TARDIS and they walk out and there they are?
Well, so yeah, I mean, I, as much as I love Quantum Leap, I didn't want to take that much of a premise and everything. So they are, you know, more or less themselves when they do go into like these different, you know, time periods. Now, one of them has to be in disguise because, you know, it's this guy here, you know, yeah. So he's going to sort of like stick out as a sore thumb. You know, trying to interact with different people and stuff. So he has a certain quirk with him that does lead him to sort of blend in and everything. That's sort of like a teaser. So you may want to, you know, of course, check it out to see, you know, see what it is and everything. But Rebecca and Jason, yes, they are like themselves, and they have to blend in during that period and everything. You know, during the periods that they're in. So yeah, so with the Quantum Leap thing, yeah, I mean, it happens, but yeah, it's not that, it doesn't take it to that degree like Quantum Leap does.
All right, so then that leads to my second question, which is, so if they, I guess my question is like, are they noticing in the future that something disappeared out of the past and they have to go back and try to fix it? Or do they just happen to be, and they have some kind of crazy like time tablet that tells them what's missing out of those things? Or do they have to like, they just happen to be there and they happen to notice that this happens, like, or they just are like, oh, here's a police report of this guy gone missing, I'm gonna go check it out from 1812, and they just go back and check it out. And then if they fix it and they stop that, does it change their future? That's because obviously time travel. Now I got to ask all the time travel questions.
Yeah, I mean, and you got to have certain rules to it and everything. Mine isn't as linear as what we say Back to the Future, because I'm like a big Back to the Future, you know, fan. But my without getting too much into like, you know, the mechanics of it, whenever they go into like the past, they sort of like create like a nexus point, or just a point of origin, to where, you know, something does happen. And while it doesn't necessarily affect the direct future that they came from, it still affects some future. So each time they go into like a period, it sort of like splinters off, you know, and they're creating periods. They're creating like a multi-type verse, you know, as multi-periods, I should say, as they keep just traveling. And eventually it ends up being, you know, an issue. But
so it's like a little more like Sliders kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like concept, I guess, like every time they slide, they can never go back to the same one because they've changed something that.
Right.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I understand your rules for your time travel book.
it's more or less on that vein. But there's still a, like a, you know, a twist and a quirk, you know, which is revealed, which will reveal, you know, through time and stuff, that they end up, you know, because the whole thing is they're trying to solve a mystery of why people are disappearing in the present. So eventually they're going to have to get back, like Sam Beckett was trying to get back. He's going back and everything, back and forth. So they want to get back to where they came from. So while going through history and stuff is fine, and, you know, they're going through their adventures and stuff, they're still displaced. They still have to go through their trials and tribulations of, you know, being missed, you know, with their, from their families and stuff. And like time travel just opens up like a whole bunch of doors of like storytelling. So, you know, I get into it. I do have an idea of where I'm going to go and where I'm headed, because I'm only on like the second issue, you know, as far as like being published at this point. But yeah, I mean, I see this as like a good long running series, but not too long, not like saga long or anything like that, but okay. It does have its,
like 24 issues.
Yeah. Like 24. If I get blessed and lucky to get 24, I'm like right there, you know? So, right. But yeah. I have a lot of story I want to tell.
Prepping for 24, hoping for 12.
Yeah.
Two trades. It's all I need. Trades.
Yeah, definitely. So. Definitely. But
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So my another inspiration is for my comic is Lost, you know. So I'm a big Lost fan. So when I pitch people, I'm pitching, okay, my comic is a mixture of Lost, Quantum Leap, and also The Wire. You know, The Wire sort of like brings in like, you know, the hardcore grittiness with like some of the politics and, you know, culture and all that. Lost brings in the mystery element, you know, because I love like them and Linda Lost, like mystery type, you know, mystery box type stuff, how they did that. And then, of course, you know, we talked a lot about Quantum Leap, you know, just time jumping and stuff. I'm a big time traveler fan.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you show like a picture of the cover. So that was a picture of the cover of the first issue. It represents a panel that's actually in the book itself, you know, of a big contentious point that actually happened in the book, you know, and that took place back in the late 1800s, where this actual painting, and then you see a whole bunch of blood. So it's sort of like supposed to give you the indication of, you know, why is there blood on this beautiful picture, you know, of a family and everything. So what happened? So it is for suggested for mature readers. So it's not a book for kids, you know. but yeah,
are these
this is the second issue. Yeah. So
okay. Are those the two lead teens you were talking about there then?
So, well, the one on the left here is her name is Rebecca. She is the lead teen, you know, in the book.
Okay.
The lady you see in the picture is a picture of her mom, and on the right here is a variant cover of the second issue, and that's Rebecca's best friend Samantha. She's not traveling in time yet. She's still in the present. She's going through her stuff. So I do have like side stories on different individuals that didn't travel through time, that I'm doing as well within like, you know, stories within like stories and everything. But that's the best friend right there on the variant cover. And of course we have the guy in the back there. So the man in the red suit is like a legend throughout like the different time periods and stuff. So he's been jumping through time for like a long time. And people, when he does jump and come to like a point and he appears, you know, people have seen him. People, he's like a legend, you know, he's like a legend within like the world, like the universe, but people really haven't really captured him or seen him like to capture him like in picture form, to the point where, you know, he jumps into a period with like, you know, some kids, and the kids have made up like an actual song based on him being like the boogeyman and everything. So, you know, people just think he's like, you know, an urban legend, you know, he's not real, you know. This is just something that was made up by conspiracy theorists and stuff. You know, this guy is just, you know, just hooey booey and everything, you know. You can't really tell what people are, but this guy has been seen by different individuals and stuff throughout time, you know. And the kids have made up a song. It's called Crazy Man, Crazy Man, Red, 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 Black with the Yellow Tie, Dead, Dead, Dead.
Wow.
Yeah, something, and then there's another rhyme that goes with it that the kids do display and everything. So it's just like a whole mythology surrounding just him and his, you know, his mystery and everything, along with everything else I got going. I got a lot of the balls going up in the air, John. So
all right. So now let's talk about your origin story. So the way this works is we've asked everybody that's been a guest basically where you started with comics, like what got you into comics, like what's your background, and then like, were you always in comics? How did you get to the point where you're at now? Like, and pretty much anywhere in that. Oh, wait, real quick. When does Theme of Thieves kickstart?
So Theme of Thieves is already, it's already live. So it's been live for like the past like 24 days now. So I actually got 8 days left on the Kickstarter. So if you guys are liking everything that I'm presenting and everything, I mean, make sure that you're going into, you know, on Kickstarter, searching for the Theme of Thieves. You know, hopefully John gets a link. I'll send you a link so you can like, you know, post it and everything. But make sure that, you know, you guys are, if you like what you're hearing, go ahead and pledge. I have pledges just for like the first two issues, digital copies, as low as like $10, you know, and I have different pledge tiers that you can pledge to. I got like metal covers. So I even got metal covers of the first issue. So a lot of people are digging those, and I only got like a limited quantity of those. So I've already got like it's a pledge tier of like $75. You get like not only the metal cover, you get like a director's commentary. So, you know, creator's commentary, I should say, MP3 that I've made. And I've also made a soundtrack. So you get that along with that. You also get a copy of the second issue, along with some other stuff. You guys will see it in the Kickstarter when you go to the link. But it's awesome. The great thing about the Kickstarter, it's been doing really good. The funds from the Kickstarter are going to actually getting the second issue made, because the first issue is already made. So the funds are going towards that. And it's basically just out there supporting like a independent creator, you know, trying to make his way into like the comics. And to segue into that, my origin as far as comics, I've been in the comics ever since I was 5 years old. My dad bought me my first Spider-Man comic, Amazing Spider-Man, with Scorpion on the cover. I forget which issue it was, but I was not a big reader at that point, or could, you know, read like a bunch of words. But I think reading those comics at that early age got me into reading a lot, you know. So I ended up being just a big reader, period, of different things, and especially, you know, genre fiction and stuff. But I was just enthralled with like the colors, you know. I was always into like artwork and stuff, you know, enthralled with like, you know, the colors and, you know, these human beings dressed up in crazy costumes and, you know, sticking on walls, flying through the air, anything that basically had to do with something that was outside of the realm of reality, I was into, you know. So, fiction stuff was always, you know, my thing, especially comic book stuff. And once I got my hands on that comic, it was no taking it away from me, you know. My father wasn't that deep into comics, but I don't think he knew what he started when he gave me my first comic.
I was just gonna ask, like, if he was like into comics and then was like, here, you need to learn to read, or was it more just like, you maybe you'll read this because it looks fun, like that kind of thing.
So he was more or less, because he read them as a kid, you know, he picked them up and put them down. And that was basically just that, just sort of like, I guess, as a kid thing, you know, back then. But to me, it was more than that. You know, it was just a whole different world, whole different adventures and stuff. I was able to, you know, put my imagination into. I was enthralled with like the stories as I got better with reading and everything, enthralled with like the worlds and just lived in them, you know, carry bags of comics and stuff. I couldn't wait to. I remember when I first went into my first comic book store, I thought it was like the greatest thing on earth, because I used to get everything for like the newsstands, you know, get your milk, your.
Me too, man. It was a spin rack at the literally a place called the newsstand. Oh, it was rough.
It was a different experience. And then when I first went into my first comic book shop, it was just like a whole different world there. I was like, all this stuff is for me. You know, I don't have enough money to buy everything.
Which shop was that at? I'm just curious.
This was in Cleveland called Off the Wall. I think it's closed since then, But yeah, it was around for like a long time at Southgate. You know, if you guys are, you know, anybody from Cleveland and everything and in the comics knows what Off the Wall was, because that was a very, very good comic book shop.
Nice. I know the guys at Friendly Neighborhood and it's the other one in Cleveland. I know one of Mentor called Comics and Friends. They're pretty good dudes. Yeah. And then Hey Kids Comics, they're out in like North Olmsted area, a little south of the city. Man, I know this. Oh, there's another one in downtown. I can't remember where it is. I was just curious which one, because I know. I guess my other question is, did you ever run into Bendis when you were buying him back then? Because he was from Cleveland.
Yeah, no, I never ran into him. You know, I wish I did, because I love a lot of his stuff and everything, the Superman, the old Spider-Man, you know, Ultimate stuff. Yeah. But no, I never ran into him. There was I can't remember the name, but I think I remember the one you're talking about downtown. That we used to go to like a lot when I was like a kid and everything. But yeah, I'll probably end up doing some of the tours on that, you know, once I'm doing like, you know, full-fledged stuff, store promotions and stuff like Marvin does, you know, so that'll be something to put on my schedule and everything. But yeah, I mean, the shops were decent. And then I was doing a lot more artwork growing up, you know, drawing comics and, you know, trying my hand at that. It was me and my best friend, Demetrius. This guy here, you know, he passed away about a couple months ago, but he
sorry to hear that, man. Demetrius,
but we used to But we used to do like a lot of comic artwork. He used to inspire me with the way he, you know, he draws and stuff. But I wasn't as good as him, so I ended up getting away from the actual drawing, you know, aspects of it and getting into more like, you know, college stuff. That was when I was ending up going to school. I didn't really get to writing until later, you know, when I wanted to really delve more back into like, you know, comics later in my life, like right around like, you know, my early 40s and stuff. So got into that, and actually I wanted to actually put something together as far as a comic and get some, you know, a team together to, you know, put my own, you know, spin on, you know, stuff that's out there. While I'm fans of a lot of, you know, superhero stuff and just a lot of, you know, work period, I say, let me try my hand at this and see what I can do. And thus, you know, the idea of the Theme of Thieves, you know, came about, you know, started developing that story. And sometimes getting stories together take a long time, and finally came into fruition where I actually did a Kickstarter last year for my first issue, got my first issue made. So
nice
origin story right there.
So in a nutshell, I don't remember if you said it, but how did you meet the rest of your team to do the book? Like, because I think I read some. What's that?
I said, great question.
Yeah.
So my man Dan Ekus, you know, he's my artist. You know, he does like the pencil and inks and everything. I met him at at Steel City Con in Pittsburgh. So I was out searching for artists. And searching for the right artist for your work is like, you know, a chore in itself and everything. I was scouting all over Instagram, all over like, you know, Facebook, the internet, through DeviantArt, you know, trying to find like, you know, a good artist that'll be able to communicate my vision, you know, everything I wrote, you know, down into, you know, on the paper and stuff. And ran into, you know, while looking for artists at Steel City Con, I seen Dan's work. And it was more simple, more like, not so much David Mazzucchelli, you know, Batman for like, you know, year one and everything. But I liked his style. I liked the way that he presented the characters, his characters that he drew, and the way he told the story, you know, from panel to panel and everything. So, you know, we started talking, and he was doing his stuff. He had some stuff out called Odyssey Inc. You know, he did Kickstarter on that, and he was giving me the rundown on, you know, he was like, you know, DP, you should do your own thing, you know, and, you know, get this story and script. You know, if you ever put something together, I'll be glad to, you know, do a couple pages for you, see how that works. So I ended up commissioning him to do like a 5-page spec, you know, script. And it ended up just blending. And from there on, you know, he was a member of the team. And then my colorist, Alex Zief, she's from Mexico. Okay. So I met her online. So I haven't met her in person yet. It's amazing about the internet thing. You know, you talk to people, but you don't physically meet them, you know. Yep. But I seen her work on Instagram and follow her with her website and everything. And it looked like she was a good colorist and got her onto Dan's stuff to see how it worked. I tried out a few different colors actually over Dan's work and settled on her. And she came through like a champ as far as like that work. And then my letterer, Marco Della Verde, he's a friend of Dan's actually. So I just went with his recommendation and used him for all my color, for all my lettering stuff. And then Sam Rocha, he's the editor of the book. So he does like, you know, all my editing, you know, making sure the story's straight, you know, making sure, you know, the plot lines make sense and everything from issue to issue, from page to page and everything. So that's my team, you know, shout outs to them. They've done like a really fantastic job on, you know, getting this stuff together. So I really can't even I couldn't do any of this without my team.
Right. No, it's always good to mention those guys. And like I said, I was just curious, like if it was like dudes from high school or dudes from college, you know, like especially with all the like the people that went to Art Institute around here, you find that a lot of them just run in those circles where they find their own they find friends, and then if the friend do it, and the friend may or may not actually be the best person for it, but it still gets it moving.
Yeah.
And that's all you really need.
Yeah, I wanted Demetrius, you know, my best friend from high school, he was my first choice in actually doing it, but he was too busy at the time and to get a lot of the work done. And I really, really wanted him to do it, but unfortunately, we just couldn't work it out. And that was like my best friend and everything. So sometimes I think it actually worked out because when you do stuff in a business type of setting, whereas like with Dan, I could just work with him straight business and no emotional communication whatsoever, you know, no ties, nothing like that. And he does what I commissioned him to, you know, to do, and he gets the work done, you know, in a timely manner. And I no muss, no fuss and everything. Put the contract out there. Sometimes you get the contract issues with friends and everything. You know, you hire somebody to do your job and, you know, pay so long as you pay them and they deliver the work, you could continue the whole relationship.
Yeah, that's I have found because I used to play in bands and like while sometimes it was really nice to have like your best friend there because like they could kind of read how you're playing and what's going to come next and things gel very quickly. Mm-hmm. But then as soon as somebody needs to leave the band, it's like a whole to do and it just sucks. Yeah. Cause I've had to deal with that a couple times and it blows. So now I'd probably be like, hey, if this band needs a rhythm guitarist, I will totally do it for this amount of money a month or a gig, you know, because my time is very not, I don't have a lot of it.
I mean, you brought up a really great point, John, because I think that was the biggest thing, because I actually stood around waiting for, you know, my best friend to finish his job and everything. And then it got to a point where it just didn't make sense. Because you're right, time is very valuable, especially the older you get and everything. You're like,
oh, yeah.
You know, time begins to be much more valuable than money, you know. So, you know, if you got the money to spend and everything, it's fine. But that time, you're just not going to get back. So hiring people to do the stuff that you wanted them to do is much less stressful and much less time consuming than, you know, trying to get your best friend or a great, you know, colleague and everything to do things, you know, based on just like a trust type of thing. You know, you'll never get a lot of stuff done that way. So I've been fortunate though.
Exactly. Because then like when deadlines come up, you're like, hey man, I really need that by this time. And then they're like, but I'm your friend, so it's going to be an extra week or two. And eventually you're like, son of a bitch, it's a month later. I need this shit.
I know how it is. Keep it
perfect. So is this your first work or have you done other stuff before? Like what else? Like what do you do as a regular profession? Like all
that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I have my regular 9-to-5 and I'm not going to mention them on like, you know, the
because they suck. Whatever.
But yeah, so I, this is my first comic, you know, as far as that, but I've been writing for like, you know, other, you know, I've wrote blogs and stuff, you know, articles and everything, you know, for some sites and stuff, Nerdcyclopedia, I've done like, you know, several things for them. I have actually done like a children's book, you know, called Sammy and Sissy. I did it during like the pandemic. And it's about like, you know, two children who I've actually, they're trying to figure out how they can help during like the pandemic. So it was a really good book during like, you know, that period. I mean, even though we got like a little bit still going on. So some of it is still like relevant as far as like washing your hands, keeping clean, making sure that you're understanding, you know, how people are doing like the, you know, during this period of time. But the premise of
respect
it is
personal space.
Personal space and everything. But in the book, they're trying to figure out they're trying to figure out how they can actually be heroes, just like, you know, people like the doctors and like the nurses and stuff.
Oh, that's cool.
How they can actually be heroes too, to help out, you know. So that was my, you know, it was a good book. It was the artwork was done by my mom. You know, she passed away.
That's awesome. Back in, also know, sad.
A couple years ago and everything. So, you know, rest in peace, mom. So yeah, that was like her last, you know, piece of artwork, and I just had to get that book out. So yeah, so I've done that. And we're actually going to come out with another children's book sometime next year, based on like some other artwork that she's done. You know, that left and everything that I want to turn into like, you know, some stuff too. So a little busy there.
No, it's awesome. I actually kind of want to check that book out, because I have some like friends of mine who have kids that might still need that, even though they're doing pretty good. Definitely check that out.
Yep.
All right.
Go to like themeofthieves.com. You know, that's my official site, themeofthieves.com. I do have a dedicated page to Sammy and Sissy. So you know, there's right there as well.
Cool. I'll pass that on for them. That's awesome. All right. So we got a little bit of time before we'll talk about the Batman. Oh, man. Who in the comic world inspired you to get into comics? Like, is there any like, were you like, oh man, like J. Michael Straczynski is my dude, like, or
so my biggest influences, I should say, from comics is Alan Moore. You know, I'm a big Watchmen.
Yeah.
You know, Alan Moore, you know, anything he does, you know, he I'm reading Miracle Man after all these years of trying to scout and find it and everything. So I'm reading Miracle Man right now, and that's some really good stuff. But, you know, he's been like a really big influence. The Frank Miller stuff, like the Dark Knight stuff, you know, Batman Year One, anything from like the Dark Knight universe, I'm really, you know, into. So I'm really, you know, influenced by that. But that's on the comic side and everything. But I'm really more influenced by like Damon Lindelof stuff. You know, he's like the writer from Lost. Like I said, I keep mentioning Lost until the day I die and everything. He's such a big influence on the way I
love that show like so much.
Story. Oh man, it's just such a great show. I hope they never remake that.
I don't think they can. It's like it's like, well, what? How do we make it more weird? Well, we can't. Okay, cool. You know what I loved about Lost? Mm-hmm. Wasn't even the actual show, but it was this website called the Tale Section, right? And it was like all the theories, and they would do this this YouTube channel like shorts, but they were with the action figures, and everybody always died except for Hurley. And it was this awesome one where it was like they started bringing like other action figures in it. So it was like Indiana Jones on the Island of Lost. And it was
that, because I didn't remember that part of the YouTube stuff. Okay, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was
right after this.
What the hell was the dude's name? It was Penny's dad hires Indiana Jones to go and find the island, right? so he's there, and or they're all there like like trying to like talk about some stuff, maybe golf, I don't know. And they're all like the McFarlane toys, but they don't really move. They just kind of move. And all of a sudden, this giant tinfoil ball comes rolling down the thing.
Tinfoil ball? Oh, wow.
Yeah, right? And they have oh, I can't think of it. Jin, you know how, because his character's like tied up, like he's screaming from the beach. And they're like, Dr. Jones, there's a giant tinfoil ball. And like a short round from Temple of Doom. And like the ball crushes everybody except for Hurley. So he's like, oh, dudes, I guess I'm the only one left. I'm just gonna kill myself, dudes. And he like drowns himself in this giant like vat of ranch dressing, and like Dharma ranch dressing.
Dharma ranch. Oh man,
there's one with like Voldemort. Oh man, there's a couple of, but it's hilarious. You really need to watch it.
I gotta check that. That sounds like, you know, right up my alley. that was during a time where the internet was really starting to be like, you know, the internet. You know, starting to really come together with like all their fan theories and stuff. It was a good time to be like a fan for, like, you know, outside of the actual, you know, content, because you had like X-Files and stuff, and you know, mystery stuff that happened before then. But Lost really took it to like that level where, you know, you just had to consume everything in order to get like the total experience. So yeah, I'm really influenced by that, and I hope, you know, some of the stuff I'm doing with this book, because I'm also planning on doing like side stories on my website, themeofthieves.com, where they're written in prose, coming from different perspectives of people in the universe, not necessarily my main protagonist in like the actual main book, you know, the main book and everything. I'm doing like side stories and everything that'll just be published on the site. So, got some really, you know, some really decent plans I'm planning on doing.
Cool. All right. One last pitch for all of your stuff. So website, Kickstarters, all that stuff. And then we're going to talk about the Batman. So everybody check this stuff out and then give it a second. I'll give you a spoiler alert. Then you can stop listening or you can mark your time and come back and finish it later after you've seen the Batman. So, all right, pitch it.
So, if you like a good time travel comic mystery, The Theme of Thieves is what you want. So, like I said, it's about two teams who travel through time, and they find them. Well, they run into a mysterious guy, and the man, he's called the Man in the Red Suit. And they're trying to solve a mystery of why people are disappearing in the present. Just a reframe. What if you lived in a world where people randomly disappear? You know, just vanish, you know, no type of, you know, answers as to what, you know, happened to them whatsoever. They just gone. And what would happen if that was a societal way of life? How would people react? How would religions be? How would politics be? How would like the daily lives, how would culture be, just period? And who, if anybody, would be able to stop it? So that's what our hero, that's what my heroes are doing in, you know, in this world. They're jumping through time, trying to solve the mystery of why people are disappearing in the present. I got my Kickstarter live going on right now. There's 8 days left, going on 7 days left in the project. So it's going to be ending next Friday, the 18th, March the 18th. So definitely jump on it. You know, I have the first issue and the second issue available on the Kickstarter, so you're able to pledge, you know, to those. If you haven't gotten the first issue, definitely be able to you know, pledge to both, like I said. Make sure you also go on to themeofthieves.com, because I got some really great content on there, along with a blog that I'm actually blogging my 30-day experience of running the Kickstarter. So, you know, people are jumping onto that. If you're a creator and want to know like the thinking process and everything that goes through my mind as far as running this whole Kickstarter, from the ups and the downs and everything, that's on my site, themeofthieves.com. But make sure that you guys are especially going to the Kickstarter again. 8 days left. Is something that I think you guys are definitely going to enjoy, especially if you're a good mystery fan, if you're a Lost fan, if you're a The Wire fan, if you're a Quantum Leap fan especially, you're definitely going to enjoy my book, Theme of Thieves.
Awesome. One of our avid Thursday Warriors, Ron Gamiss, said he's going to just go and do the 75 starter Kickstarter right now. So, because he wants that metal cover, man.
Appreciate you. It's nice and shiny and everything. Woo, man. I just got these books back off the press like about a couple days ago. And when I, because this is my first metal cover, you know, when it came back, I was just ecstatic with the way they, you know, they just came out. So definitely appreciate you. If you're going to go and, you know, get that metal cover, you're definitely going to get something that's definitely a good collector's edition. And I'm signing it and everything. So it's going to be worth it.
All right. So now it is your spoiler alert. If you have not seen the Batman, turn the fucking video off. Because we're going to talk with spoilers. Full on, you've had a week, what can I say? But now is the time, spoiler alert. So you know, you and I were kind of talking about this earlier, but like, I really like this movie because A, Batman's a detective. Like, he's not doing a lot of Bruce Wayne stuff. He's very detective-y. Secondly, this is the most terrifying, realistic Riddler I've ever seen, and I loved every second of it. And I was telling somebody earlier who asked how it really was, and I said, if you liked how they modernized Joker in Dark Knight, this is, like, more terrifying than that Joker to me, because it's so much more twisted, like, where you... Because, like, Joker just doesn't... and does it like yeah. This is, you have a riddle to possibly solve it and right. stop it from happening. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that it's like, oh damn, you didn't get any of these right. What the hell, man?
Yeah, calculated. He's yeah. way a very calculated, you know, villain versus the Joker, who's just all about chaos.
Yeah. I liked the sort of Batcave. I liked that it was in Wayne Tower this time, yeah. and not just like back at the mansion. I thought that was cool. Yeah. I was not super sold on Andy Serkis's Alfred, mostly because I think he was underused.
Yeah, yeah. We didn't get a lot of him and everything. Hopefully next movie we get a little bit more. We didn't get a lot of Bruce Wayne either. So
right, which is not a bad thing, also.
No, not at all.
I really liked how they, and I think it's a lot because I used Ego as like their base point book, but mm-hmm. like we finally got to see the Black Case book. Like mm-hmm. we see him journaling, and mm-hmm. it almost has that like Dexter vibe of creepy. To me at least. And then other than that, I thought that I thought Catwoman was good. I didn't really like the mask that much, but I thought she was the best Selina Kyle we've seen. Not necessarily Catwoman, but Selina Kyle, that we've seen on screen yet.
Yeah, because the Selina Kyle from like the Michael Keaton, the Tim Burton Batman, she was just a little flighty and a little goofy and everything. But I love her Catwoman, you know.
Yeah,
this Selina Kyle here, she was straight from like, you know, Frank Miller Batman Year One, you know, Selina Kyle, you know, going out doing like the burglaries and everything. But doing it with like a purpose. Love the short hair. Loved her relationship and dynamic with, you know, this particular Batman. And right. Although we didn't, like you said, get a really good chunk of Bruce Wayne in the movie, I think he was pretty much Batman the whole time. Even though we're seeing like right. Bruce Wayne in his mind, he doesn't want to be Bruce Wayne at all. You know, he just wants to do the Batman thing all the time.
I got to run downstairs for a minute. So you give your full spoiler. I'll be right back.
Oh, yeah.
I can hear you because I have my Bluetooth earpieces.
Oh, yeah.
But I got to run downstairs real quick.
So, yeah. So this guy gets like he's like the full Batman, like the whole time. So the great thing about this Bruce Wayne is that we get a more complex indication of why, just a sort of like a middle thing with him, just wanting to be Batman all the time. So, you know, Bruce Wayne is like his costume or whatever, where Batman is like his real face. So we get a lot of that in like the comics and stuff, and like references to, you know, Frank Miller stuff. And even like, you know, to a degree, what Chris Nolan did in like the first couple Batman Begins and also Dark Knight, where, you know, this guy, he wants to just go out and play at night all the time and really not do the Bruce Wayne until he actually has to. So when we do get like our first Bruce Wayne, you know, actual appearance out in the public, you know, he's really just, you know, he's slinking and, you know, he's doing his thing and people are remarking that they haven't seen him for like, you know, a long period of time for like, you know, they're surprised to see him just like out there. So when he actually does get out there, you know, he's really just still in Batman mode in his brain and everything, you know, especially when, you know, that car comes into like the funeral, you know, bursts into like the funeral, then all of a sudden, you know, he can't go out and change into like, you know, his costume right quick. You know, he's just looking and, you know, observing like the whole area. He even ends up saving like the kid, which they really like, they sort of made it seem like he might end up being like Robin at some point, but I don't think, you know, anyway. But yeah, so this Batman, I love the way that this particular Batman is not like your bulky, you know, just, you know, full of like muscle and everything. This guy is so practical. You know, this Batman is really practical and it's like, you know, appearance and stuff. And at the beginning of the movie, we have him starting out with like, you know, wanting to pummel criminals and be that vengeance stuff. And then by the end of the movie, it's a whole different thing with him.
Yeah.
He's ended up being like the city.
I really like the point that you brought up of that Bruce Wayne is the mask. Mm-hmm. Right. And like, you know, my wife and I actually had our only nerd conversation about comics ever was about why she likes Superman, because she doesn't like comics, but she likes the idea of hiding in plain sight. And, you know, I think I've always thought more of that for Batman, because he's just like, you know, nobody ever sees him as Bruce Wayne. You know, they only ever see him as Batman. Which is kind of nice when you actually get a good Batman story that Bruce Wayne is actually focused into, or he does like a weird, like Matches Malone type thing, which honestly, I think if we're going to get Matches Malone in some kind of movie, it's going to be in this trilogy, because it's going to make two more.
Yeah.
I loved that whole church scene though. Like that was so crazy. Yeah. So good.
Yeah. Getting to, you know, to end of that church scene and everything, you got like him meeting up with Carmine and, you know, them getting into like their history and everything. Thomas Wayne stuff, they sort of tease and stuff, and then people not really recognizing him in the public. You know, you got that one guy talking to him when he was going into like the funeral, and then sort of then just realized he was actually Bruce Wayne, the son of the city and the prince of the city,
yeah,
as they call him and everything. But you know, because they don't see him that often, they don't remember what this guy looks like, you know, because he doesn't come out, you know.
Yeah, they're like, oh, he's a recluse, blah blah blah. Like, what the hell is he doing out here?
He wants to make that appearance at the funeral and stuff. But like I said, we was talking, we don't get that much of Bruce. You know, we get more of him, you know, being, this was a really great way of actually displaying what the Batman is. And like his relationship with Selina, when he sends her to do his dirty, you know, do the dirty work with like the lenses and stuff. I love the way they interacted, because Batman, you know, she was just like, you really don't care what happens to me. You know, you just want me to go in there and, you know, just risk my life, and you don't really care, do you? You know, and he's not responding. You know, this is like the a-hole Batman that I'm like used to. You know, he's just all about his mission, and his focus is so, you know, just focused and everything, that this is one of the best representations of Batman I've seen on screen.
I agree. It was very well done. You know, and Tim and I talked a couple episodes back about like who our favorite Batman was, who our favorite Bruce Wayne was, and who our favorite at doing both was. I don't remember what his were, but mine were just Batman, Val Kilmer, just Bruce Wayne, Michael Keaton, and then both was Christian Bale.
Okay.
I'm really thinking Pattinson is bringing me very close to toppling Val Kilmer as just Batman, because I haven't seen him enough as Bruce Wayne to give a shit, you know, like he hasn't to rate that yet.
Yeah, he hasn't really. I think I will be there with you. Michael Keaton is my favorite Bruce Wayne because, you know, his Bruce Wayne was sort of, especially in that first movie, sort of distracted. He played the distracted role really good to sort of differentiate himself from, like, you know, being a Dark Knight. So I love the way he portrayed, you know, like Bruce Wayne in that movie. And then fast forward to this, I think Pattinson is my favorite Batman, you know. Like I said, we haven't seen enough as Bruce Wayne to get a good definitive thing on that. But this Batman here, yes, it does rank, like, for me, like towards the top there.
He's real close to that top for me because it's just like he just personifies the detective stuff that I like. That's the part of Batman I love. Like, I'm not really a big go and do the Justice League stuff crap Batman. Like, I don't really care that you're the only non-superhero dude on the superhero team.
So
you get to run the shots, whatever. Like, I like when he's like in a room, like being very detective-y, and he actually has to figure out stuff and he sees stuff cops don't. Like, that to me is the Batman.
Yeah.
And there's some cool homages to different Batman scenes in this movie. One very specific one that I can think of is there's a scene where a cop looks with the flashlight and then the Batman's hanging up in the ceiling and falls down on him. Yeah. Like, it's like an homage to Affleck.
That's the first thing I thought of when I seen that scene. Yeah.
There were a couple more. There was one or two that I was like, okay, that one's a Christian Bale era scene, especially the motorcycle, like the one that's almost like the Batpod at the end. And then there's another one where it's very Keaton era, even Schumacher era stuff going on. But I really liked the whole thing. Like, it's 3 hours, but it definitely didn't feel like
it didn't feel like it. And think about one thing. I really liked how it was a year two Batman. So we didn't get like the origin story all over again, everything. No need to rehash that because I mean everybody should know, you know, this the origin story of this guy, but we still get a raw year two Batman. And I love that one scene where they were on a hunt for the Riddler, and guy finally got into his Riddler's lair and see all his articles and everything, all the displays and stuff on his posts and stuff. And Batman is thinking, this is about to be it. Like, you know, he tells Commissioner Gordon, Lieutenant Gordon and everything, because he's not commissioner yet.
By the way, I think he actually is now going to be my top Gordon. He fucking nailed it, man. It was like that old beat up cop that you'd see on like RoboCop. Like, you know what I mean?
He Jeffrey Wright, he definitely did his thing there. But you know, he's talking to Gordon, and you know, he says to him, he's like, maybe this is about to be the end. And you know, Gordon's like, the end of the what? And he's like, the end of Batman. He's at the end of this Batman thing, and right there we see like this guy is like a little terrified because his identity is about to be outed if they get into, like, you know, this you know, if they get the password right or whatever to that thing that you know, the Riddler had locked. And he's thinking this is about to be the end, and we don't really see Batman scared in any of these movies. You know he's usually like, you know, the know-it-all and ready to go at him and stuff. This Batman here, he's still doubtful about certain things. He's still hesitant, you know, when he is getting chased by the police and goes off the roof. You know, he gets a little scared before he gets into like his parachute and stuff. So I'm loving like the raw humanity that's still inside of him, saying that this guy, even though he's out there doing, like, you know, punching villains and, you know, bad guys and stuff, he's still scared. You know, he doesn't know what's gonna happen, you know. And right through that point where he's about to get, you know, where he thinks he's about to get his identity revealed, was really the only time we get an actual mention of him being referred to as like the Batman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really just overall liked it a lot.
Yeah.
I also liked that we actually got Falcone in a movie, like a good one.
Yeah.
freaking Colin Farrell as Penguin though was like frightening
because unrecognizable.
Yeah, I was like, no way. I was like, that can't be him. And I was just like, holy crap. My only complaint about it is that he's kind of tall.
But I agree with you.
But he walks with that like that limp, so it's you know, so it kind of
when they tied his feet. Yeah, he had to walk with the, like a penguin. You know, like
right.
That was really
so. Cool. Now that we have Falcone, Cobblepot, Arkham. And Wayne all mentioned, and he's living in Wayne Tower. All I can think of is, are we now going to get the Gates of Gotham miniseries as a movie? Because those were the four families that built the four towers that surround Gotham and lead into Wayne Tower.
Okay.
Like that's what I'm hoping that we get next time.
That would be something. Now I haven't read that one, so I might have to actually check that out in my DC universe. You know,
yeah, it was a mini series. It was very, very good. And then the other one is they kind of also opened it up for like a Court of Owls thing, which would be cool. To see.
Right.
Yeah.
So if they get into those things, that'll be decent. I don't know why I was thinking like No Man's Land when the whole thing like flooded and everything.
That too. Yeah.
It sort of reminded me of that, where Gotham is just like in a place where it's separated from like, you know, another part of the United States and everything. And they just have to fend for themselves. So I was kind of shocked that they sort of left it sort of hanging like that, because usually in these films, you get like a more of a happy, you know, happier ending and everything. Not this film, you know, it ended a more of like a hopeful, you know, with like, you know, Batman helping the people rescuing, you know, people and stuff. But I was very surprised that they flooded the city and that was it.
Yeah. I was actually surprised it actually happened.
Yeah.
So, but I thought it was also cool that they mentioned Bloodhaven. They mentioned a couple other places in the DCEU or DCU. And it's kind of cool to think, oh, does this mean we might get a Nightwing? Like, and is he going to be a Robin?
Can you see Robin in this universe, or should they go straight to Nightwing? What are you thinking there?
I think that they definitely could do. I think they could do a Robin, and then him be like, look, man, you're a little too crazy for me. I'm going to just go do my own thing, like at the end of the next movie. And then the third movie, he'll come back in to help out as Nightwing, and he just hangs out in Bloodhaven the whole time.
Yeah.
At least that's how I always pictured it in my head. And they don't really need to do another Robin. Because it's just weird, but
this is a different universe here. They don't have to do like the straight origin, comic origin of Robin or whatever. This guy actually, I mean, I think this Batman here, or this Bruce Wayne, one of the two, this guy needs somebody, you know, because the guy never smiles, you know. He needs something. he needs something in his life.
Just sits in his cave and listens to Nirvana, man. What do you expect?
Like emo Batman, you know,
right
what we have
for him. I was like oh man, if he starts listening to like AFI and like My Chemical Romance, I'm out, you are not gonna work for me. I'll be like, you're really playing into it, dude. The other thing though, that the reason I say that Catwoman was probably the best Selina Kyle we've seen is, if you read like the new 52 run where she took over the actual, I think she took over for Falcone, like she became the kingpin of Gotham. That run was pretty much like the vibe that I always associate with Catwoman, or at least with Selina.
Yeah,
like, you know, the Brubaker run is what I think of when I think of Catwoman.
This is
like that, that new 52 run is what I think of when I think of Selina. And I really thought they, like, Zoe nailed that real hard.
She did her thing. You know, she came on the scene and everything, you know, making that impression and stuff. And like I said, you know, just loved her dynamic with Robert, you know, Pattinson, period. You know, they just interacted, and you know, she didn't really care who was up under the mask. She just wanted to be with the bat.
Yep.
Which is, you know, kind of like how she is, you know, period in like, you know, the comics and everything. But yeah, I mean, she was a really good, really good character. And I mean, you know, yep, we talked about Gordon too. Really great Gordon, you know, mm-hmm, one of the better Gordons and everything. I loved, you know, the Dark Knight. I forget what that actor's name, but you know, he was a really great, you know, Gordon and everything. We've got some really decent Gordons.
Yeah. Was that Gary Oldman?
Yeah, Gary Oldman. Yeah.
Yeah, he was probably my second favorite Gordon. J.K. Simmons. Not I needed so more of him.
Yeah, we needed more of him. Yeah. They just stuck him into like Justice League, and yeah, you know, there he's going to be in a Batgirl, so we'll see how that works out.
Dude's in everything. It's crazy. There's like the people play 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. They need to play 6 degrees of J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, he's a worker. Sam Jackson's a worker. Yep. Who else? Yeah, like these actors, they just go out and just do work. Dwayne Johnson, he's a worker. That's all they do is just work, you know.
Henry Cavill, he's a worker, man. Oh, he does a lot of stuff.
Yeah. They just do their thing.
Right. But
great movie.
Exactly. So let us know what you think about the Batman in the on the Facebook, and make sure you check out DP's Kickstarter. I'll post that link on the Facebook later tonight or tomorrow. And thanks again for coming on, dude. It was a lot of fun.
I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Catch you around.
Yeah,
man.
Absolutely. You know, love talking to you. Sorry I didn't meet you. You know, the your cohort and everything. And I hope
it's okay. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's like kind of like making love to a toilet right now. So,
it's that time of year and everything. So, you know, hopefully it just gets better and everything. So,
mouth to mouth, though, at least. Not ass to mouth, just mouth to mouth. So, but no, it was good, man. Like, you're more than welcome to come on again when you get issue 3 ready. Or if you have any other projects, let us know, man. We'll totally have you on. It's a good time. And hopefully we'll see you walking around Three Rivers Comic Con in June, and it'll be
the plan good. Was for me to actually, because I did last year's Three Rivers Con and everything, I didn't have anything out yet. I was basically just there promoting, you know, as a vendor and stuff. The plan was to get into this one, so I think I'm actually on a waiting list, but I don't know if I'm actually going to be around that weekend. So it's 2 days at David Lawrence, so I'm going to try to make one of those days.
Okay, man. Saturday or Sunday, you let us know. We'll get you there. All right. Thanks so much, guys. Thanks all you Thursday Warriors for watching and listening. And remember to hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, share us, like us on iTunes and Spotify as well. Subscribe to us on there and leave some comments, and hopefully everybody has a great, great time. Next week, we have another guest, and I totally forgot to write down his name, and I feel really bad about it right now, but he's another indie creator. He does a book. I'm not even going to do it because I'm probably going to screw it up. It's something garden. That's all I can think of. But the book was very good. It's an indie creator. Indie creator. That's all we do on this show is have a bunch of fun indie creators, because they're a lot more fun than the stuck up big name guys. I mean, not that they're actually, I don't think I've actually ever met a stuck up big name guy, but it's like we love hanging out with everybody. Like if fucking Alan Moore wants to crawl out of his cave and come onto the show, I will absolutely take Alan Moore. Some 5-year-old kid who's doing their first book wants to come on and promote it, I'll take them too. Everybody's welcome here. Right. So, but thanks everybody, and we will catch you next week.